Hi, this is Huggy Boy. This is going out to all the homies on a Sunday afternoon.
This is how we do it.
You wanted to never rush your money.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Hops and Notes for episode 5. Ooh. Joining me for this episode is Ruben from Turning Tables.
Hello there.
Ruben, you have any intros? You want to do a thing here?
Or? I'm just Ruben from Turning Tables Podcast, the D&D podcast part of the Horrible People Network. And I'm just here. I'm here to talk about some good music.
Hell yeah.
I'm super excited for this album.
Yeah. We were just like, I don't remember what we were going to do. And then you're like, can we just fucking do Prince?
Yeah,
we should. Why not? But before we get into that, we're going to pop a bottle.
Pop a bottle.
Again, from the brewery in Placentia, mm-hmm. We got Bragberry. This is a blended barrel-aged honey ale with blueberries. They blend some wine barrel-aged honey ale with some brandy barrel-aged honey ale, then added the blueberries. Beer's coming in at 17.7%.
I wasn't aware it was that strong.
It's so huge.
Yeah, let's not kill this thing.
No, I mean,
we would die. I mean, we could do it,
we're gonna have to because it's not corked. It's bottle-capped. Yeah, so it just looks fancy.
In hindsight, Alex, we might hang out in your park for a while.
We might watch Psycho Gorman one more time.
I'm down for that.
Now we can. All right, there we go. All right, I know what color this is already.
Oh.
Yeah,
it's deep.
Yeah, it's like a dark brown.
sir, that's a lot.
No, we're gonna nurse that.
Yeah, it's like a deep brown, like almost like a hue of, like, I want to say amber, kind of. It's mm-hmm. kind of like this rich, I don't know how to describe it, like a rich brown color. Like, it looks like there's a little bit of molasses in it, but that's not what it is.
You smell that?
It smells. Oh, by the God.
It smells like brandy barrels, like, holy crap. All right, sir. Cheers.
Cheers.
Ooh.
Huh.
That's not bad.
Nah, the honey part is definitely a little bit forward.
You want to read the back of the bottle?
Yes, sir. I can definitely do that for you. Bragberry. Blended barrel-aged honey ale with blueberries. You don't mind if we brag a bit, do you? We can't help it. Our obsession with honey ales can't be contained. This time around, we blended some hand-selected wine barrel-aged and brandy barrel-aged honey ales and treated it with blueberries for a richly sweet, slightly tart take on our honey ale series. Yeah. Best stored and served at 55 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah. I took it out of the fridge a little early, so it's not like ice cold, but it's still kind of cold.
No, it's decently cold. It's pretty hot today, so this is phenomenal.
Yeah. So the style of beer is, I'm going to ruin this and some beer nerd's going to yell at me. It's either Braggot or Braggo. It's Braggot. For those who don't know, it's a form of mead made with honey and barley malt.
Oh.
So instead of it being straight up honey wine,
right,
they add that barley malt to give it the beer-ish flavor.
Tracking. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Now,
so,
is blending it with the
other types?
Yeah, is that something that's commonly done?
I think that's just like a brewery thing. Like, maybe that's what they were going for with this one.
Yeah.
I don't really know, because a lot of places don't make this. I mean, places do make this, obviously. It just takes a long time to make.
Right.
So, it's one of those, like, they have the patience and the time for it. They're going to do it. Ruben, what are you giving this out of 5 bottle caps?
I am a fan of brandy. The barley end of it, like, the ale part of it kind of gives me a bitter taste, but it's not terrible. I mean, it's a very flavorful beer. Mm. If it was me, I probably wouldn't pick this. I'd probably try it and then maybe pass it to somebody else.
Right.
I'd give it like 2.5 bottle caps, honestly.
All right, just halfway.
Yeah. It's not terrible by any means, just not my flavor palette.
Yeah. I dig it. I'm going to give it like Shit. 3.75. I like the flavor. I thought it was going to be more tart because that's what people at like the brewery were telling me when I picked it up. They were like, yeah, it has a like tarter taste to it. And I was like, nah, dude, I don't care. Like, I hope it is tart. Like, I like sour beer.
Right.
But no, it's not as much as I thought it was going to be. But it's still good. Jesus Christ. I would not drink all of this by myself, though.
I mean... We'll try. <Pretty close. laughs> It's gonna be a rough day.
Yeah. But now that we started drinking this Strong Boy, let's get to this album. As said earlier, today we are discussing the legendary Prince album, Purple Rain.
Purple Rain.
Purple Rain.
Every time, I don't care.
It has to be done.
It has to.
Ruben, you got some information on our boy.
Yes, I do. Prince Rogers Nelson was born and raised in Minneapolis. He was only 19 when he signed a record deal with Warner Brothers Records, soon releasing the albums For You in 1978 and Prince in 1979. But today, we're talking about Purple Rain. It's his sixth studio album, but was his first with his backing band, The Revolution. It was released on June 25th, 1984, as the soundtrack to the 1984 film of the same name, Purple Rain. This is the one most musically dense albums he's released, with multiple layers of guitar, emphasizing full band performances, drum machines, electronic synthesizers, and more. The lead single on the album was When Doves Cry, and Prince's first Billboard Hot 100 number one single, staying for 5 weeks. Makes sense. Damn. That song is fucking phenomenal. It was ranked number one on the Billboard year-end Hot 100 singles of 1984. The second single, Let's Go Crazy, became his second number one hit on the Billboard Hot 100. The track listing for this album goes as follows. Let's Go Crazy, Take Me With You, The Beautiful Ones, Blue, Computer Blue, Darling Nikki, When Doves Cry, I Would Die For You, with the number 4 in the name and the letter U, Baby I'm a Star, and Purple Rain.
Hell yeah, man.
Yeah.
So, some fun facts on this album.
Ooh, give it to me.
Let me see. I gotta find where... Okay. So, regarding the meaning of Purple Rain,
mm-hmm.
A few people, like writers and reporters, wrote that Prince took the title Purple Rain from the lyrics in the America song Ventura Highway. Asked to explain the phrase Purple Rain in Ventura Highway, the guys from America were like, you got me.
Just sounded good.
Yeah. But however, Prince explained the meaning of Purple Rain as follows. Quote, when there's blood in the sky, red and blue equals purple. Purple rain pertains to the end of the world and being with the one you love and letting your faith / God guide you through the purple rain.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
You know, and we talked about it before, like how you can interpret music differently for everyone.
Yeah.
That is not how I interpreted it at all.
I never thought of it that way. So, like, reading that, I'm like, damn, he was on, like, some next level thinking with this. And there are parts of this album where it gets real gospel. And, like, he criticizes some religion in it, too. Like, not obviously not outright, but, like, you can see metaphors in what he's saying about, like, a religion. Or it can be, anyway.
Right. And that's pretty crazy, because, like, now that after you just explained that to me, I see this album, just, like, in this moment, totally different.
Yeah, right?
I don't like it any less. If anything, it makes me like it more. But it's just, my whole life, listening to this album, especially Purple Rain and Doves Cry, immediately, it's just been tweaked. Yeah. It's like, insane.
Wait.
Yeah. Because I always put it as in, like, I don't know, like, the Purple Rain always felt to me like reflection on life.
Yeah, I thought that's how I listened to it.
Yeah, and that's kind of how it is, but like on a grandier level.
Yeah,
like
now it's big. Yeah, and like, it was self reflection. Now it's like mega self reflection. Like that was insane.
And I like it that the original band just kind of like it sounded good, and Prince is like, no, this is what it means.
This is what I got out of it.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay,
sir, you read into it.
Purple Rain was originally written as a country song.
What?
And it was intended to be a collab with Stevie Nicks. According to Nicks, she received a 10-minute instrumental of the song from Prince with a request to write the lyrics, but felt overwhelmed. She said, quote, I listened to it and I just got scared. I called him back and said, I can't do it. I wish I could. It's too much for me.
By the gods.
So at a rehearsal, Prince then asked the band to try the song. He said, I want to try something before we go home. It's mellow. So according to Revolution member Lisa Coleman, mm-hmm. Prince then changed the song after the Revolution's Wendy Melvoin started playing guitar chords to accompany the song. He was excited to hear it differently. It took out the country feeling. Then we started playing it a little harder and taking it more serious. We played it for 6 hours straight, and by the end of the day, we had mostly written and arranged.
That is dope as
Could
hell.
Could you imagine alternate universe country Purple Rain?
I mean, it wouldn't be bad. Cause like
I just want to know what it sounded like.
I just imagine it's like, dun-dun, Purple Rain, Purple Rain. It doesn't... It works, though.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't... So I don't listen to a lot of country. There are, like... My favorite country songs I could count on one hand.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm pretty sure if this was made as a country song, it would be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's just how good the song is. It doesn't matter what kind of genre it is.
And so that like that's the thing for me. Is like, so this was... It was originally written as a country song.
That's so wild.
That I already wish I could have heard that 10-minute instrumental he sent her. But he took it out. And now the song, and not only the song, but the whole album, it has pop tones, it has funk tones, it has like dance and electronic tones. There's metal and fucking punk tones.
Yes, they are innately rock and roll.
Yeah,
they are. It's the Revolutions themselves are innate. They're a rock band, bro.
Yeah, and 100%. So that's why I was like, man, it wouldn't have been that weird if it stayed as the country song and they just put it to the movie, and like obviously the movie would be different. And, like, everything would be different. Mm-hmm. But now it's got, like... Now it has all of it again. Like, it fits in with the album better, obviously.
Yeah.
But, like, holy crap.
Whoa, I'm mind blown. That's insane. Did not know that.
Yeah. Just insane. Somebody from Rolling Stone in 1984 compared Prince to Jimi Hendrix, praising him for merging, quote, black and white styles on this album. Like,
yeah. I mean, yes and no. Like,
I don't know.
So we're gonna get a little racist, not in the demeaning term, but yes, there are certain music styles that are more associated with African American culture.
Yeah,
some stuff that are obviously more Caucasian in culture, mm-hmm. and it's not a bad. Maybe it's a little dated, but it's not a bad interpretation of what they're trying to say. Yeah.
That was also 1984. Like,
that's true.
They weren't sure how to say, "Hey, this man plays like very well." But...
Yeah, he was not as woke as us, I guess.
Yeah,
but well, no, it wouldn't maybe poorly written, but that's not a bad estimation of what Prince was. He was a very big amalgamation. I would describe him as a focal point in the merging of music.
Yeah,
he is definitely a point on the spectrum where a lot of things just meshed and then spread again from there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so on this, listed as musicians, obviously Prince, lead vocals, background vocals, lead guitar, piano, and various instruments except where noted. I'm assuming it's in the like album book.
Tambourine.
Yeah. The whole Revolution includes drums, bass, guitars, keyboards, mm-hmm. Obviously vocals, cello, violin and viola. It's actually two cellos.
Hey.
It's an ensemble at this point. It's almost like a P-Funk album.
Yeah.
Where they have like all kinds of 800 people on this fucking thing.
And that stems from like old school big band vibes.
Yeah.
Like, best example for anyone who doesn't know, I'm talking like Ricky Ricardo from I Love Lucy.
Yeah.
He had a big band jazz. Well, he also had like the Colombian flavor in his. But like, that's where that stems from. Everyone has... apart, you have all these different musical pieces so you can encompass different sounds.
Exactly. Oh man, so weekly charts, you know, US had them at number one, Purple Rain. US top R&B and hip hop albums. I don't know when this was done. This is just a link. But also number one, 2016 performance for Purple Rain. U.S. Billboard 200, number 2. U.S. Soundtrack Albums, number 1. Let's see. 2017 Weekly Chart Performance. He got back up to number 4. So, obviously, this is a very influential. It's 13 times platinum.
Purple Rain?
Yeah.
By 13 times platinum.
At least in the United States. In the U.K., it's 2 times platinum, and...
X amount everywhere else. That is 13 times platinum. They couldn't make another metal to encompass it. They're like, it's just that good.
Also, so in like on the Wikipedia as under C, also list of Billboard top 200s, you know, whatever, list of best selling albums, list of best selling albums in the United States, list of fastest selling albums. So he did very well.
Oh yeah,
and I mean obviously like we still listen to it.
Yes, it's 1000% a good song. Like Purple Rain obviously leads the whole pack, but this album is really good. Mm-hmm. Like. And Purple Rain is just, it's a piece of music culture. Like, you cannot get rid of Purple Rain in any sense. Like, it's exactly. Just, it's embedded in our psyches. If you don't know Purple Rain and you're listening to this, you're wrong. Stop, pause.
Go listen to it.
Listen to it right now. Like, and you'll understand why we speak with it such grandiose.
And so, it's a short album. It's only 9 songs. It's about 44 minutes long.
It's not that long, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very short album. You can get through it pretty fast. I think yesterday at work, I listened to it like 4 times just because I could.
Yeah. Yep. I was listening to it all day yesterday, and while I did a lot of driving recently, so I just had it on loop for a while.
Yeah.
So.
All right, let's get into it. Number one, let's start with Let's Go Crazy.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to celebrate this thing called life. Again, that very kind of gospel preachy.
I literally wrote straight up starts taking everyone to church.
Yeah, like
within
yes.
The first 20 seconds of the song. It is so good. And this is, it starts with the guitar track in this is a punk metal riff.
Yeah.
And then the last solo shreds.
They shred so much in this album. Like, there's a couple so endings. Like, not to jump ahead, but there's a couple endings in this album that are, like, legit metal breakdown crushes. Like, it's so insane.
That's exactly how this one ends.
Yeah.
It's just, oh, man, so good.
And I also put, okay, so awesome song to sing along, obviously, when it's, like, when he's talking about the elevator bringing down, what do you say? Oh, here we go.
Yeah.
Everyone sings that part. And then I described it as, like, a party guitar solo, because it's a guitar solo in the sense that it obviously everything else kind of cuts down and follows the beat, but the solo doesn't disrupt like the party flow. Like it's very much a dancey song.
That's what I was gonna say too. Like that solo, the middle one.
Yeah,
it's just a really good guitar track.
Yeah,
over the dance and like it doesn't ruin at all. Like you said, it keeps the flow going. It works, and then obviously the end. It's a hard stop, but he like tears it up.
Yeah,
So, obviously, before we started recording, I was talking to Ruben about his 2007 Super Bowl performance, and he opens with Let's Go Crazy. This song was written to open shows.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it is the whole Dearly Beloved, like, that...
Talking directly to the audience.
It's insane, and, like, God, it was only the 6th album, like... That's, and now he has a song that he could have opened every other show for the rest of his career with that.
Yeah, you could, that's just the song. Even if like, for example, there's in San Diego, they have this thing called the Purple Cruise.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
Yeah, they've heard they open every time with that song.
You got to, man. It's such a good intro. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that track. You have anything else written down for that, sir?
I just like it a lot. Like, I was telling Daddy again before, I usually like to take diligent notes when I'm listening to tracks for the show, but it's just so good that I forget the right notes.
Yeah, you get distracted easily.
Yeah, and then I start the song over, like, okay, I gotta listen to it and write stuff down, and I'm just like, here we go.
All right, track 2, Take Me With You.
Take Me With You.
What do you got for that?
So, it's obviously, it's a decent love song. Mm-hmm. Very, an upbeat, little catchy. The opening, though, is a little ominous for, like, a love song.
I wrote, the intro is, like, mystical sounding almost. Yeah. It sounds like we could sample that for Turning Tables if we really wanted
to. Yeah, we could, just the beginning.
Yeah.
And then in the movie, this is, spoilers for the movie, I guess.
It's been out since 84.
84, you know. And again, like I said, the plot of this movie isn't... The plot for Purple Rain isn't the greatest, but the themes and the story is good enough that you can enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, the love interest has showed up, and he picks her up, and they're going, they're like in the middle of nowhere in like Minneapolis or Minnesota, wherever the hell they are.
Lake Minnetonka.
Yeah, Lake Minnetonka. Well, they're by Lake Minnetonka, yeah. But they're not at Lake Minnetonka, which he discovers later on in that scene. But it's very the, you know, the starting of the love interaction in the movie.
Right.
So it's a good love song. Again, like the opening is what catches you at first, and then it switches over to it.
It's such a trip.
Yeah.
I also wrote that I really dig the violin tracks in this.
Yes.
Like, just, again, this is Prince and the Revolution sprinkling small amounts of flavor into mm-hmm. a song, and like, it didn't need the violins, but damn, it helps. Like,
yes.
It sounded so good.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. It's a good song. Like, it's not the strongest song of the group, but still, it's a good... Every song on this album is a good song. They're just ones that are way better.
Yeah, and I think why this album... I think so a lot of this, the way it goes from track to track, it mm-hmm. doesn't flow as well. Like, the mood changes a little bit. Like, obviously,
right.
from 1 to 2, completely different mood change. Right. And I think it's kind of like... It's set up like that because of the movie.
Yeah, it's very much supposed to go in hand-in-hand with the movie. Yeah,
so, and that's, it's like, the movie, shit happens in between, like, it's not it's a musical, but, like, it's not an actual musical. Like,
right.
So.
And I think that's also why I said the plot's a little choppy, because they just need things to happen for the story. For this. So, like, it's understandable, but I would say, to its detriment and to its benefit, Purple Rain, the movie, is just a very long music video, with all the music, all the songs put in. That's how I would describe it.
And a big motorcycle.
And a big purple motorcycle. Big
purple motorcycle. Have you seen Sebastian Maniscalco? He's a comedian.
I'm sure I have.
He has some Netflix specials. I think they have one on there when he talks about Prince.
Yeah.
And he talks about Michael Jackson for a little bit, and then he talks about Prince. And I think he was just a bigger Prince fan at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, do you guys remember Prince? 5'2", wearing little boots. That's the best thing too. He was so small.
He was a small guy, yeah.
Man, that stage was his. Like, everybody looked up to him.
He had a presence.
Yeah.
And
so Sebastian talks about that, where he goes, could you imagine meeting these people at, like, you know, let's say you work at the record company and there's a big party and Prince shows up.
Oh my God.
He's like, hi, I'm Prince. This is Apollonia. What's your name? And he's like, I gotta go fucking change it. Like,
yeah.
It sucks.
It was a good example of it for, like, modern time. You ever seen New Girl?
No.
So there's a scene in the New Girl where, I forget why, but they're trying to sneak into Prince's party. Like, the party in L.A. And they're trying to sneak in. No avail. They're having, but inner turmoil. Like, the couple in the show is having their own problems. And they sneak in somehow, but they forget, like, what they're doing.
God damn it.
So they're arguing in the courtyard. And then all of a sudden, like, they turn around and Prince is standing there. And he's just like, hi, my name's Prince. Like, he's in this little quiet voice. And they're just standing there. He's like, oh, I'm sorry. I haven't given you enough time to freak out. You may. And all of a sudden, just from stone face to, like, the girl starts crying. Like, oh, my God. And the guy just starts yelling. He, like, literally is just yelling. And then he passes out. Like, I feel like 1,000%, if I could have met Prince of the Flesh, that would have been me.
Yeah. I think him and, I mean, we've had this conversation, him and Michael were, like, the last people to have that real effect on people, mm-hmm. because, again, like, social media, great, we have so access to everybody at any time, but also, like, we almost care less when we see these, like, these celebrities, and, like, they were, like, one of the last two mega celebrities, where people fainted when they were in public. People passed out at the shows, and not because they were drunk or dehydrated or anything.
They were just so overwhelmed. They were excited, yes.
And, like, man, that's gone. And, like, it's so wild to me. And I don't think anybody's going to be able to do that unless we either ban all social medias, or whoever gets that power again.
Yeah.
They don't have it.
I don't know. Again, like, speak to what we're talking about earlier. Michael is also one of those people where a lot of music genres and culture were at a focal mm-hmm. point. That's why, like, you can go anywhere in the world and somebody know. You can say Michael Jackson and they know who you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that anymore with a lot of modern-day celebrities or musicians.
Exactly.
So, I don't know. Like I said, it's just different now.
Yeah. Man. Fucking Prince.
Fucking Prince.
going on to track 3, The Beautiful Ones. What do you got?
So this is where we start hearing the higher octates of his voice, like the very like "Want to Be Your Lover" style singing, mm-hmm. where it's very. I know at this time, like after the Bee Gees and everything, only a few people could even hit that type of melody still like make good music. So like, it's good to see that coming through. I think this is like one of the only ones where he's singing like that constantly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it does give you like, you know, it gives you a look a little bit past and forward. Because I want to say Be Your Lover was before this. I know Kiss is definitely after this.
Oh yeah, it was on Prince.
Yeah, so yeah. And then Kiss was after this. But you know, that's again one of those things where like, it's weird, but it makes him... it makes him look more talented and for some reason more attractive. Like, yeah. I don't know what it is. It's because not everyone can do it, and he can do it well.
Yeah.
So it's like, it speaks to
and
more.
And constantly.
Yeah,
like, he was able to do it the whole time. It never changed, like, throughout all the years. He still did that live.
And then this is another song where it's not a love song in the sense, but it is kind of like a will they, won't they song. Mm-hmm. I do like the line where it says, "You make me so confused."
Oh, yeah.
Because he is trying to get, like, in the story of the song, he's trying to get an answer from the girl, like, "Hey, is it me or is it him?" Because mm-hmm. I don't know if you want me, but I want you.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
So, I don't know. I like, and then it fits with the movie, because at this point... Not to tangent off, but in the movie, Morris Day is, like, the villain, quote-unquote. Yeah. So it's, like, kind of comical, because he plays it a little goofy, mm-hmm. which is great. And I love Morris Day in the time, so it's just funny. He's, like, the antagonist. So he's trying to get Apollonia to get on his side, but literally as he's sitting at the table talking to her, Prince is singing the song at her from across the club. Just, like, and he points at her, "I want you."
Yeah.
And it's just, like, it has magnetism to it.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote, we get back to that almost gospel sound again with, like, the organ sounds. The emotion comes out at the end that you're talking mm-hmm. about. Like, it gets so big without making instruments get wild. Like, it's all his voice and his presence. The voice changes the vibe in such a great way at the end. Like, you feel the emotion. And then he translates it so well that, like, even if you haven't seen the movie, you get that from the song. Like, it's powerful. And it's insane. Just, god damn it.
It's good.
Track 4, we got Computer Blue.
Wendy. Yes, Lisa.
Is the water warm enough?
Yes, Lisa.
I literally wrote, "Is the water warm enough?" Also, shout out to Chappelle's Show.
Why?
In the part when Charlie Murphy's telling the story about playing basketball against Prince.
Oh.
And he gets the, like Dave gets the ball and he's like, "Run the play, Computer Blue." And like, gets the ball over his head. I'm almost dying. It is so fucking funny.
That would be a good joke for like, if they made a modern day football movie, like make the quarterback like with the Prince presence.
Yeah.
And instead of like Red 32, be like,
"Computer Blue.
Computer Blue." And he runs back. Yeah. It would be a good reference. I think it'd be missed on a lot of people nowadays, but like, we'd get it.
So funny. Yeah. That's definitely for like the people who still like listen to Prince actively and like their parents obviously listen to it. So they do now.
Yeah. Very synthy. This song has a lot of synth mm-hmm. in it. And then also again, like this song plays with lyric and everything for a good while, but the very end again is like this kind of grandiose breakdown or like they play like melody for a while until the very end of the song. Like it's almost an instrumental when you get halfway through.
Yeah. I remember and I pulled up the lyrics for it. I was like, man, that's really it. I forgot how much this is just instrumental.
They don't sing for that long. But, and then again, going back to the storyline of it, this is like after, well, actually the next two songs are played together in this part of the movie. But they've just had like this altercation of two couples. So like he's stuck between two places. He's thinking like, well, where's my love life going? How is this going to eventuate out? And that's what the song's all about. Like, where am I in life? How does love work? Am I destined for love kind of concept?
Mm-hmm.
And then this song actually does flow into the next song. Like, it's meant to be played one after the other.
Right.
But the vibes of each song are against
totally
each other.
Different, yeah.
They're polar opposites in the sense.
For this one, I wrote, like, the guitar licks in this are insane. Oh, like,
so good.
Oh my god. He put his soul into these guitar parts. And obviously at the end, but, like, at the last song, but like this one specifically, I remember listening to it, and I listened to it a few more times just because I was like, God, I forgot how like, I remember how well he plays, but I forgot how well he played on this song specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh my God. And again, that's one of those things where like, you could have taken all the lyrics out, just made me listen to the instrumentals. You never think Prince.
No.
Not at first anyway.
Not until you hear the voice.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Man, I love that.
I'm upset about like, Purple Rain could have been this, they say country, but I feel like it would have sounded more like Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
Which people say is country. I don't think so.
It's
if anything, it's country rock.
Yeah.
But like, The Chain, get the fuck out of there. The Chain is phenomenal. Yeah. Like, that's a rock song. I don't care what you say. But like, a Fleetwood Mac sounding
Purple Rain
with Prince? Oh my God. Yeah. Like,
it's been in my head ever since
I'm still upset
that.
About it.
Ever since I read that, I was like, damn.
Damn.
All right, what's track five, Ruben?
I don't know. This beer is kind of strong.
It's Darling Nikki.
Oh yeah, I was just talking about this.
Yes.
Sorry, I'm towards the bottom of my cup and I'm a little buzzed.
Yep.
Oh, I'm farther than you.
Yeah. You're a little
you know what?
The lyric I wrote down, oh my God, he killed it. It was a shot.
It wasn't bad though.
No, it doesn't burn.
No, but it doesn't burn, but it tastes... It's like brandy. The blueberry brandy is definitely there. It's actually easier. The more you drink it, it's a better drink. Mm. I think that initially it's a little... Again, like I was saying, the flavor profile is a little bit against me on that.
Mm.
But now as I've been drinking it more, I like to rescind my bottle cast earlier. Yeah. I want to bump it up to a 3.
Hey, yeah. There it is.
By the time we get to the second cup, it'll probably be like a 4.
Everyone's like, I'm drinking 3 more of them.
Yeah, right?
For Darling Nikki, I wrote, masturbating with a magazine.
It is horny.
It is very horny. It's probably like the horniest song.
Yeah, it is super horny, but it's like proto-Erotic City.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like, and it doesn't have the, because Erotic City, they have the both, I believe Lisa is doing vocal track. And then, not Lisa, is it Wendy or Lisa? I forget. One of them is doing background vocal tracks on Erotic City. And then they also have, like, the deep voice in the back, every time I'm cold.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, like, they have those 3 different octaves of sound. This is like that without, 1, the whistle, and 2, the 3 vocals.
Yeah.
But it's very horny.
And the end is trippy.
Yeah.
The end, it gets back to that weird mystical vibe and feel and like...
So the end, they start playing, I believe it is part of the vocal track backwards.
Yep. Oh, that reminds me. I did have it. Go ahead. I'm going to look it up while you're doing that. Yeah.
But in the movie, before this point, when Prince and Apollonia start hooking up, she goes to his room... And he puts on a music track, and it sounds like a woman moaning, like she's having sex.
Mm-hmm.
But she's like, oh, who's the woman? Sounds like she's having a good time, like being kind of, you know, apprehensive about it. She's like, no, she's crying. It is played backwards. And it's like that diapathy of like how a cry for pain and like sexual moaning
right.
are on the same spectrum. Like, it's weird.
So at the end, backwards, it's, hello, how are you? I'm fine, because I know... That the Lord is coming soon.
Oh my goodness.
Coming soon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And it's that being played backwards.
Yeah.
That's weird.
There's another one that has that too.
And it's weird because also in the movie, Computer Blue and Darling Nikki are played right after another. Like, he's on stage and, again, it's him figuring out what he's doing with his love life because he's very confused. Like... Mm-hmm. They don't do a good job with plot, but they do a good job with representing, like, domestic violence and the cycle that is perpetuated by domestic violence.
Right.
And he's starting to see his father and himself. So he's real confused right now.
Right.
But he's also very mad at Apollonia for things that are happening in the movie. So he goes from, like, this question, like, I don't know where I am in the world, to this, like, in the context of the movie, this is a direct shot at her.
Right.
Like, her kind of... She's going from, like, being on his side to flipping over to Morris Day to be, like, in a band. Like, she's trying to become musically famous also. So he's, like, in this context of the movie, is, like, calling her a whore. Like, you're flip-flopping. Like, now you're joining his side just to get ahead.
Right.
And she, like, literally has to run out because she feels it so directed at her.
Mm.
And he, on stage, is being very playful. He's, like, laying down, putting his hands on his chins, but he's looking, again, right at her while he's singing it.
So and I think he's got one of those faces, too, and his eyes, like, you see it in the live performances and shit, and, like, obviously the movie, but, man, like, he does have that vibe about him that, like, when he does sing and he, like, if he were to make eye contact with you like that at a concert, it'd blow your mind. You'd definitely feel like he's actually staring at you. And that's such a good part of that movie. Oh, man. Track 6. We all know it. We all love it. Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun. It's When Doves Cry.
So I literally wrote, slaps, classic as fuck, filthy guitar riff. Oh, my God. That's a metal fill.
Absolutely. It especially when it's breaking down, the guitar's coming in and he's coming in the background.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's I hate to say it, it's only my second favorite Prince song behind Raspberry Beret, but it is, like, I literally, so my family has this running joke. So my family, my love of Prince comes from my stepmom's side. They're all older generation, but they all love Prince. Mm-hmm. So growing up, obviously, I was subjected to a lot of Prince while I was growing up. And we have this working thing where if Doves Cry is playing, or any, like, good Prince song, and we just parked, and we got, like, say we just got home and Doves Cry just started, we don't get out the car.
Yeah, you gotta finish
we
it.
We finish the song. Even if it just started and we just pulled up, like, anyone starts getting out of the car, like, what the fuck's your problem?
Yeah.
Get in the car. We're listening when Doves Cry.
I literally just talked about this. We were watching the boxing fight last weekend at my brother's place.
Yeah.
And one of my cousins goes, hey, I think our moms are, like, one of the few people that they'll, like, just get home from work. They can be tired as hell. But they have that one good song on, and they'll throw the car in reverse and just go drive around.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I'm pretty sure I told you, like, I do that, like, every once in a while, too, now. And, like, it'll be... I remember the first time it happened, I was supposed to go to my aunt's house because I was going to dog sit for them while they were going to go on vacation. And she was like, yeah, just come over. And I was like, yeah, for sure. She lived right around the corner from my grandma's house. And as I'm leaving in my car, Freebird came on.
Oh.
And I was like, well, I'm going to drive around for 10 minutes. Yeah. And I told her, I was like, hold on, I got to finish this song. But, so, I'm glad we got to When Doves Cry. I probably should have brought it up a lot earlier, but When Doves Cry and Purple Rain, they do it the best, I think. I was looking at the YouTube comments of the Super Bowl show, and some dude posted, and it was, like, a dumb comment, but then, like, I started thinking about it. He's like, Prince doesn't sing, he just talks. And I was like, eh, no. But also, like, he does do that, like... Dig, if you will, the picture.
It's,
like,
it's a very melodic talking.
Yeah, and, like, yeah, he is talking. And, I mean, the beginning of Purple Rain, I never meant to cause you any sorrow. Like, he's not singing aggressive. He's not, like, actively getting in there, but it's that melodic speak and the way he carries his voice. And
it builds, because he does, at the end, is like, he is screeching, like, banshee, but beautiful banshee screaming at the end. So, yeah, and he does do that. In Doves Cry, like, it is very talking, melodic, and then at the end when everything's breaking down, he is hitting those high notes.
Yeah.
And this is, like, if metal and funk had a baby, this is it.
Oh,
Doves Cry is, like, people don't think those things mix. That's what this is right here. This is funk, soul, metal, all meshed into one. Like, you gotta remember, The Revolution is, a rock band.
Yeah. I mean, it's not much, but I think I poured a little more than that.
Okay.
But, yeah, no, exactly. I think this song has, again, this is one of the perfect examples of mixes of all types of music into one dance song.
It's
a dance song,
good.
But, like, flavors of everything.
And then the lyrics are they make sense. They're wholesome. They're not just, like, speaking because it sounds good. Like, it's talking specifically, like, someone who's lost and he's trying to figure out why. Like, there's a relationship that's just broken up. He relates it to doves because love's supposed to be, like, one of those creatures that mate for life. Ooh. They're symbolic with love. And then it's like, oh, how could you leave me here? What did I do? Like, it's because I'm, like, my father. You know, it's because, like, I'm like my mother. And again, that shows in the movie, too, because he's, like, looking at the only examples he has for love, and it's abusive father and an overbearing mother. So it's like, I might be the cause for this, because look who I learned from.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it does, like, I listen to this song thousands of times last year. Because, like, I went through the biggest breakup of my life, and it was like, it just, it speaks to you on that level. Because you think, why did this happen? And you look for answers, but sometimes there just isn't answers.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things, too, where, like, that's, like, a very active, like, interpretation of these lyrics.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people don't know what this song is about.
No, they just hear it and it sounds good.
Yeah, and they like it. They think it's like a dance song and everything and like it's fun. But like, man, this song's sad. Like, this is, again, this is some blues. Like,
yeah.
And so, and man, the reasons why I say dig all the time. Like, if I say, oh, can you dig it? Like,
can you?
It's, dig if you will the picture. Like,
you and I engage. I will sing this whole song. We can't. Yeah.
But if, like, he started that, dig if you will, like, also, nobody starts songs like that.
Also, if you watch the movie, it kind of changes the aspect of it. Because they play it in the movie. He's, like, driving around, and he's just thinking to himself. Mm-hmm. He's, like, looking for Apollonia, but he's also just driving around on his bike. And he sees images of his dad, he sees images of his mom, he sees images of her. And when they're saying, dig, if you will, the picture, he's talking about, like, time they've already spent together.
Right.
So it gives us this weird, like, rose tint glasses kind of feel, where, like, because the relationship between them is, like, real, it's bad. Like, they don't have a relationship at that point. So it's, like, he says it hypothetically, but these are things that have happened. Mm-hmm. Like, they were together. And it was, like, it gives this weird sadness to it. He's, like, imagine this. But you don't have to imagine, because you guys actually lived that.
So, what's a trip to is, God, I love that I found a way to shoehorn fucking Pink Floyd into this.
Let's go!
In The Wall, do you know the song Mother by Pink Floyd?
Oh, I'm sure I've heard it.
It's an acoustic mostly, but like the solos, you know, it's a Pink Floyd solo.
Yeah.
It's distorted, all kinds of effects, but it sounds great. I taught myself how to play that song because I really like that song. And in the movie, it's obviously a flashback scene, but it's showing flashes of the kid, of Pink growing up as a kid.
I think I remember
different moments, but the way they do it in the movie is it's done a cappella.
Ooh.
So, like, it's kind of a cappella. Instead of hearing the guitar, you hear these, like, bells, and it's just, like, very dreamy sounding. But
you hear, like, for Pink Floyd.
Yeah, and hear, Mother, do you think they'll drop the bomb? And, like, silence.
Ooh.
And it's, I think it, like, that is so cool that they could have done this. With this, like, because of those scenes, like, of him thinking to himself, and, like, just, I mean, of course, it's kind of the vibe of this song, like, the tempo is a lot faster than Mother, so, like, it'd be kind of hard, but, like, you can do something like that if you, like, remix and kind of, like, change the way they sing a little bit, like, you can make this, like, with that applied looking back on, like, this breakup and this relationship that he had in the movie, you could make it real sad and like make people understand the lyrics like that. But I mean, I'm not even gonna hate, like, I like the movie.
It's so good.
Where did you watch it, by the way?
It was on HBO Max.
God damn it, I should have watched that last night.
I literally watched it 20 minutes ago before we started this.
I might watch it tonight. All right, we're gonna move on from the slapper of all slappers to number 7, I Would Die For You.
With the number 4 in the letter U.
And the letter U. I'm gonna start this real quick because I wrote lyrics. Not a woman, not a man.
Yeah.
I am something that you'll never understand.
Yes.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. That could have been done today. Mm-hmm. That's something that somebody could have written today because it would be relevant. That line is insane. And then he calls himself, the quote, Messiah. Your Messiah.
Yeah.
Oh. Prince had that audacity. 5 foot nothing, however tall he was, like, not intimidating at all, but man, he carried himself like he was Andre the Giant.
And it's weird, but I think people on a very primal sense kind of want something like that. Like, someone who, like, can be the answer for everything for you. Like, that's what, like, a lot of people when they're deeply in love are looking for. Like, the Messiah, as in you are the answer for everything. I am happy because you are everything I need.
Yeah, you're the chosen one.
Yeah, you are the chosen one, but not like everyone's chosen one. You're my chosen
exactly.
one.
Exactly.
So it's like... Oh.
That's why the quote is, your Messiah.
Yeah, not
and
the Messiah. The, yeah.
And that's... I was like, man. I'm sure, of course, some religious group probably got mad about that line.
Yeah.
But like, again, that's the whole idea. He didn't say the. He said yours. Mm-hmm. And that's why I love the way Prince writes. Prince makes no mistakes. Like, he went in and told them, no, this is what Purple Rain means.
Yeah.
It's never the, meh, it sounded cool. Like, no, everything he writes has the point.
He has a very conscious writing style. Yeah,
he knows exactly what he's doing, or at least the idea he wants to get across. Mm-hmm. And he'll fucking make those words work. Do you ever listen to that rapper, Sugar Free?
Yeah.
Have you heard his I Would Die For You? So he has, it's same title. The beat's like, it's super simple. It's like, do, 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 do. Like, it's something like that. And the beat's kind of fast.
Yeah.
But the hook is, I would die for you.
So it's Prince's Die For You.
It's straight up the way Prince does it. And like, I remember the first time I heard it, my cousin was playing it in his car. And I was like, all right, this beat. And then like, you know, I like Sugar Free's rap. So he's like going in. Mm-hmm. And then when it got to the thing, it's like, I would die for you. And he's like, only if you want me to.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, that's so cool.
That's good.
But like, I love that. And it, not even hiding it, like nothing. Like, yeah, no, Prince.
Yeah, it's Prince.
And you're welcome.
Yeah.
I love that song. And I think this is a song too that like, it gets played and like people know it, but it's not like the most popular.
Right.
And it's constantly, I think it's forgotten that it's even on this album.
Yeah, and it's weird because in the movie, I Would Die For You and Baby I'm a Star actually played after Purple Rain.
Mm.
So like, I think a lot of people after Purple Rain check out mentally.
Oh, yeah.
So, because that's like the epitome of the it's Purple Rain. In the movie, it's called Purple Rain. So like, I feel like after that, it's like,
yeah.
Again, because this movie is kind of like a grandiose music video. They play Baby I'm a Star and Die For You in full entirety after Purple Rain.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I feel like after that point, people start to check out.
Yeah. Well, and the thing I love about I Would Die For You is that like, only if you want me to, you like, oh my God, the emotion again, he brings it out. Like, it's never half-assed.
No.
When he's going to go hard, he goes hard. And like, there are some bands, even bands that I like, that I can tell that like, even in the studio versions, I was like, oh, they were holding back on that one a little bit. Like, and it's okay.
His version of Gold Hard sounds good. Cause some people can go hard, but like they hit the vocal part so hard, like their voice cracks or like it gets overly screechy. Like, so a lot of musicians have to play within the spectrum of which their voice can handle.
Yeah.
Prince can scream and it sounds good. Like, so he can convey that emotion because it's legit screaming. Like, that's how you feel about it.
And I think, so a lot of bands that I listen to, like obviously like all the metal bands and stuff, one of the biggest ones I'll never forget, I went to see Megadeth a few years ago by myself. And Megadeth, for people who play guitar, they play E standard. That's the tuning of the guitar you buy at the store.
Yeah,
that's
regular.
The tuning they're in.
No drop D's.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, now they play in D standard. Because Dave's voice is just, it sits a little lower. He can't sing the way he used to. Yeah. So they play the same songs and it's drop D and it sounds great because they had to adjust their instruments. Where I think Prince, he was older than when he put this album out. So like, I think if he played it, maybe like, they're like, do you need a down tune? He's like, no, I got it.
Yeah,
like,
I think even
Prince was able to do it.
I think the only one you could find on Instagram for like music is like a live version from 2004, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, it's like, it doesn't sound any different. Like,
no.
Yeah,
it sounds great.
It's a live version, but it doesn't sound like, he could have done that the day after they recorded this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's one, again, him and Michael, they had that X factor. They could make it sound like the album if they wanted, but like, they always add a little mm-hmm. extra flavor when they do it live because they want to, and that's how they are.
Yeah, even Michael, he was getting old, but his voice was still there. Like, he was going to tour again before he died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, do you watch the movie, right? The This Is It?
Yeah, I think so.
There's a part where I think they're doing Smooth Criminal.
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's Smooth Criminal, where he's talking to the bass player.
Yeah.
And the bass player is playing the song, and he's like, no, I want you to hit these, like, yeah. And like, he starts beatboxing at him, and the guy's like, yeah, okay. And like, he does his best, and Michael's like, they're correcting the band. Him and Prince are conductors. They go in, and when they do like dress rehearsals and performances and shit, they're like, they want everything to be right, because if something's off, the whole, that's ruined for them, because they're perfectionists.
And you could call it like pre-Madonna, but like, they're good. Like, when they do it, it sounds phenomenal. Yeah. It's not like, yeah, they're being, like, a little picky about things, but because they can, they somehow envision the sound in their mind, and they know what it sounds like, and what it sounds like is good.
And and that's the thing, it's not even, like, prima donna, because if it was, like, a prima donna shit is, like, them getting mad that the green room didn't have, like,
oh, yeah, but, like,
crushed ice.
You'd be like, hey, my bass didn't play the song of the way I wanted him to play the bass. But, like, even there's only a few people who could do that throughout history. I think, like, James Brown was one of the ones who could also change.
James,
like,
Brown was insane.
Like, I think, what is it, Get On Up, the movie, did a good visual of, like, how he was.
Well, every instrument's a drum?
Yeah, every instrument's a drum. What are you playing?
Trumpet.
And, like, nah, you're playing the drums.
Yeah. But, and I like that. Like, I like seeing those movies where, like, they show us how they, like, think and how they perform and how they demanded stuff out of their band, because, like, at the end of the day, it's all their names on it. Like, they wanted something that they were going to be proud of, and they're fucking proud of it. I mean, they should be. Let's go to track 8, Baby I'm a Star. What you got, Ruben?
I don't have much. Again, I just have that this is played after Purple Rain, so, like, it's very overtaken. On the album, it's the second to last song. In the movie, it is the last song. So it is, like, the wrap-up song. It's very jumpy. It's got good beat. It's not the strongest song of the movie, I don't think. Although I do know it's, like, a lot more popular than I think it is. Like you said, they played it on
They played at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they played at the Super Bowl. Like, it's not my favorite Prince song, but it's good. Like,
so,
I hate to say it, but it's probably, out of all the track lists, it's probably my least favorite. Not that it's not good, again.
I wrote, like, I ain't got no money, but honey, I'm rich on personality.
Yeah, that's a good,
like,
line, yeah.
I think this song is, like, man, if you feel like shit, or, like, you need help, you need something to kind of, like, hype yourself up, like, give yourself, like, a personal boost, listen to Baby I'm a Star.
Yeah.
Sing it. Like, it's fucking great. Like, might not know it now, but Baby I'm a Star. Like, dude.
It's a good song.
But
it's a good confidence booster.
Great, that's exactly what I was looking for, confidence booster. Mm-hmm. But this one at the end also has Backwards Talking playing in the background.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And this one's a little aggressive. It's, quote, like, what the fuck do they know? All their taste is in their mouth. Really, what the fuck do they know? Come on, baby, let's go crazy.
Hey, that's dope. I don't think they play that in the movie version.
I don't think so. I think it's just, because I remember, especially re-listening to it for this, I was like, what the hell is that? Like,
yeah.
And then it took me a few times. I'm like, oh, that's backwards. Like, time to go to ye old Google.
Yeah, let's see what's going on.
I honestly think, again, I think it's not, like, the best song on this, but, like, I feel like somebody somewhere, this is their song.
Oh, no, it's definitely, like, someone's favorite Prince song, for sure.
Like, maybe they're a public speaker, like, something big for a company. Like, oh, man, I gotta listen to that Prince song. Get me hype. Like, get me in that mindset of, like, I am a star, you know, like, even if it's doing the simplest things, going to work, like, I need this to get me in the mood. Like, shit, do it, man.
That's why Prince's full track list and all over his whole career has something for everyone.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally all over the place. Like, you want some more soulful stuff, you go a little bit past this after, like, the revolution, after all this. Or if you want, like, something a little bit funkier, like, Erotic City is, like, a big one for me. Mm-hmm. Raspberry Beret doesn't sound like anything on these.
Oh, no, Raspberry?
Yeah.
Raspberry Beret. It's so different.
It's different. You wouldn't think, unless you, obviously his voice says, hey, this is Prince. But if he, like, say if he got two covers of these songs, you would never know they were from the same artist.
Yeah, especially if it's people who, like, make it their own cover.
Yeah.
Yeah, you never know. That's dope. Finally, we come to the very end. Oh, yes.
It's the name.
The title track itself. Yes. Purple Rain. Ruben, what do you got for Purple Rain? I have so much to say about this, so I got to take it easy.
So my notes have just been scrambled from the conversation we had earlier. So I took this very much as a reflection on a relationship that, like, to me, it sounded like someone talking about how human we are and how relationships, you know, they dissolve not because someone cheated or because someone was, like, bad, just, like, people change. So that's why he kind of, like, he never meant to do them any harm. Like, he just never wanted to be your weekend lover. Like, I wanted this to work and it didn't work. So I want to lead you to that. I want you to be happy. Like, even though it wasn't happy with me, I want to see you standing in that purple rain. Like, and to me, purple rain was always like a positive thing, like a washing away of like old problems. So like, now that the whole thing about like the end of the world that you brought up to me, it's way different now.
And so honestly, yeah, I agree with you 100%. That's the way I saw it. Like, I only wanted to see you laughing in that purple rain, like, bathing in the purple rain. It's so... So, just start from the beginning. This guitar tone
is
sexy. It is so good. I don't know what amps he was using. I gotta look it up, because I'm sure I can find it somewhere. Whatever settings he was running through his guitar was insane. Mm-hmm. That tone is beautiful. That's on Pink Floyd shit. Like,
yeah.
When you hear the Comfortably Numb solo, you're like, oh, that's a Pink Floyd tone. This is a Prince tone. And yeah. It's just, ooh, it's psychedelic.
It has like a, somehow like a reverb or like an echo in the back of it that like gives each note like a standing body.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's strange. It's something you would have to like tweak with to make.
Yeah.
You know, they were like in that 6 hours you're talking about, they were sitting there like, how could we make this sound better? How could we make this sound better?
So, sexy as hell guitar tone. Incredible. Again, the talk singing. I love it. I'm here for it. And I love that the first hook, it's just him.
Yeah.
Singing Purple Rain. And then the other ones after, we get the background singers. We get that choir feel. Again, solo is incredible. All the solos are incredible. But then I love when he gets dramatic. He pours his energy into the song with that. I know. Like, yeah. It's so, like, you feel it. Like, and dude, so I was like, I almost texted you, like, we're going to cry during this episode. Because.
Do you want to? I can't.
No, that's the problem. Was like, I told you I had rewatched the Super Bowl performance, and it was while I was on my lunch on Friday. And I have an hour and a half lunch now. I have no idea what to do with myself. So I'm sitting in the office. Everybody else is gone. So it's just me by myself. And I'm watching his set. And like, so I'm going to read the set real quick. It starts with a cover of We Will Rock You. He's not out yet. It's just the intro. Then he goes into Let's Go Crazy. He does 1999. Baby, I'm a Star.
Pie like it's
1999. Then he hits us with the Creedence cover of Proud Mary.
It's which, so weird. Again,
wild. Like, no idea why. Then they reprise Baby, I'm a Star for the instrumental for a little bit. Then we go into a Bob Dylan cover of All Along the Watchtower. Then Best of You by the Foo Fighters.
By Foo Fighters, and it's what?
And he's not doing the, like, the Dave Grohl. Like, so I think at that point, he's playing the Purple Rain guitar. Like, the one with the cymbal.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he has the tone. So he's hitting these, like, almost Purple Rain sounding chords, but he's like, I swear I'll never give in. Like,
yeah,
he's seeing it his way, and it's, oh. And then, of course, he finishes with Purple Rain. And the reason why Purple Rain is so good, especially for this, was because it was raining. The crowd was out. It was just him. I mean, he had, like, there was a marching band. He had, like, two dancers, maybe, and people singing with him. But, like, it was his show. And it was so, like, emotional to watch, at least for me. So I'm sitting there watching this at work, and I'm like,
were you getting all teary-eyed?
And I was like, I'm gonna fucking cry. Because it's so good. And, like, during Purple Rain, he goes, like, do you guys want to sing tonight? And, like, when he hits that, he slaps the microphone stand, like, out of his face, because the people are singing it now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... And he has, like, the marching band, the horns are playing it, too. But I was like, dude, that vibe. Like, I think that was one of the times where, when I was watching the show the first time, and even now rewatching it, like, I felt like I was there.
Yeah.
Because it was such a big moment, and the way he did everything was so well, like, put together. Everything was choreographed well, and, like, it was fucking Prince. Like, it was a Prince concert for 15 minutes.
Yeah. He owned that stadium.
Yeah.
And this is just one of those songs where, like, I don't know, it's captivating to the point where, like, this song's like almost 8 minutes. Like, it's a long song. But you want to listen to the whole thing, because each second is either, you know, the chorus comes back in and you start singing the chorus, or it gets to that long breakdown where you just hear the guitar kind of...
The song is 8 minutes 41 seconds. It's almost 9 minutes.
It carries so well, though. Yeah. Like, I think the ending is a little disruptive because it gets like the loud, like the whimsical noise kind
of
at the end.
Oh, yeah. So it is a minute of that noise.
Yeah, so I tend to either start over or go to the next song after that. But, like, the bulk of the song is just... There's so much going on, and it works perfectly together. Like you said, there's the guitar that has a very distinct, unique noise. His voice is very distinct. The background vocals all come in at the perfect time. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's like you want to sing that song. It's not a hard song to sing. And, like, again, he just... like, especially that part when he comes in and starts screaming, like, ah, no, the song, it's the chorus, and then it drops with the drum beat. And then he comes in.
And he comes in screaming.
Hard.
Yeah. And just that one moment, he spikes the
energy. The energy fucking goes
And it's just, and that's when he get that.
It's so good.
I think that's one of those songs where it was written like, that song has like 8 different parts to it.
Yeah.
And it could be 8 different songs if he really wanted to. Mm-hmm. It's
and then it has like a metal breakdown. And obviously not as shrieky or like as loud as a metal song, but that's like an end of a rock show breakdown.
It's honestly that's one of the songs that I would like if people ask me, show me a perfect song. You listen to Purple Rain.
Like, yeah, Purple Rain.
Purple Rain again. Like just because I mentioned Pink Floyd earlier, like Comfortably Numb is a perfect song to me. Like,
yeah.
That it's just so good. And there's a lot of songs by different artists, different genres, that have, like, just the perfect build, the perfect pieces for everything. It's a perfect puzzle to get what it should sound like. And Purple Rain is that. At least for this album.
For, like, the bulk of Prince's career. From this point forward, forever, Purple Rain and Prince is synonymous.
Yeah.
It's one and the same. So it's like this is now his identity, his Purple Rain.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and what's funny is if you go on the Wikipedia page
for Purple Rain or Prince,
for Prince, they have Prince Rogers Nelson, his birthday or whatever, commonly mononymously known as Prince. They put all of his AKAs. They have the symbol.
For his name?
Literally, it says other names, the symbol, then the artist formerly known as Prince, and Camille.
Yeah, we forget, he got a little weird there for a second.
He did.
He didn't change his music style, he just
decided, nah, this is me now.
Yeah, I got a little otherworldly there for a second.
But, I mean...
He might have been on that level, bro, and we just weren't ready for it. Like,
yeah.
It seemed weird to us, because like, he's like, what is a name but an amalgamation of shapes?
Yeah.
Like, this is what I want my name to be.
So he was 57 when he died.
Damn.
Definitely way too young.
Too young.
Let me see if I can find it. I gotta find it on my phone because I don't want to move my computer. Did I ever tell you about... So Gary Holt from Exodus is a huge Prince fan.
Oh, I bet.
And he got a guitar custom made. That's his guitar.
Oh, shoot. It's the Purple Rain guitar. Yeah. It's purple.
And it says Purple Rain, like R-E-I-G-N. Oh,
that's dope.
I think, he got this in 2022. I kind of like this. Oh, I'm on the Hobbs and Notes. No, on the Hobbs and Notes one. But yeah, it's the Super Bowl guitar.
Yeah.
Just his own flavor of it. But like, I remember, we all remember when Prince died, but like... I remember Gary Holt specifically, like, he was posting a lot about it. Every year he says something about his birthday. He'll share videos of him playing at shows he's been to. And I was like, it's always so funny because you and I bring it up all the time. We're like, metalheads, like, have their hands in so many different types of music. And, like, where they're... And, I mean, everybody kind of does, but, like, they're just not as open about it as, like, these older metalhead guys are. Where they're like, I fucking love Prince. And everybody's like,
what?
Dude, you play an Exodus and Slayer. You like Prince?
Yeah.
But again, if you go back to all of these songs where he's just shredding that guitar and he's going insane and Go, please go back and watch the Super Bowl performance, because he tears it up. Mm-hmm. Like, he looks like he could be, like, take him out, throw him in all black, and it looks like he's in a metal band.
Yeah.
It's insane.
And, like, a lot of the stuff he wears in Purple Rain, the movie, it's a half step from, like, what they would be wearing on a metal, like, in a metal band, like, during the time. Like, he could easily have been a member of KISS right there. Like... Like, it's not, like, if you would have just, instead of purple, just make it all black, he could have been, like, in any metal band. Like, he wears the studded leather. He wears the leather jackets. Like, he looks like...
And, like, honestly, paint everything black. Paint the motorcycle black. He looks like he's in a gang.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a 5-foot gang member, but he looks like he could... The thing is the perm, but even then, like, during that time, that was... regular, like that was a thing everyone wore, like it wasn't that out of place.
So Prince was 5'2".
He was short.
Insane. I mean, it's not like, and again, not talking shit, just it's insane that, like, if you met this man and, like, he wasn't Prince, you just met him, you'd be like, who is this tiny man with the high voice? But again, it's that charisma. He had the X factor. Yeah, he knew how to carry himself, he knew how to present himself. Insane. I cannot believe, like, I mean, obviously, like, it's easy to believe because, like, we weren't around for that time, but it's insane that this dude had all this power and, like, this type of thinking to put these songs together.
Yeah.
And put this movie together.
Yeah, and it's just, and again, it's not nothing we're not used to. He just picked the genre and picked all these different parts of music and put them together. That's why, like, I hope it comes out when we're talking about it, but I know we've talked about it before. There's so many focal points in which all genres of music intersect.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're, like, yeah, you're a soul person. You're not that far from rock and roll and metal.
Yep.
Like, if you're a metalhead, you're not that far from hip-hop, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, we are very close linked. And you can, like you said, there's some people, like, the guy from Exodus, or you could listen to anybody from, like, any type of genre and be like, hey, what are your influences? And they're going to bring something out of left field.
I mean, you're always going to get the, like, let's say they're country stars. They're going to be like, oh, yeah, you know, I like Toby Keith, XYZ, whatever. And they're going to be like, but man, you know what I really like listening to? Mastodon.
Yeah.
Or, like, you know what, like, one of my favorite artists growing up was? They're going to name some German polka band nobody's ever heard of in their life. And it's like, but check this out. And they can take you to that one point, that one song where, like, they made a weird sound, or they had a weird breakdown, or those notes. Yeah, and now it's a staple for that band, or that group, or that person. Yeah. Like,
I think the most recognized one has been on Instagram recently was Dave Grohl and the Gap Band.
Yeah,
he's talking to Pharrell about, like, how they made "Smells Like Teen Spirit," and he's telling Pharrell, like, "Hey, I'm not that greatest drummer. I just used to listen to the Gap Band, and I heard the beginning of one of their songs where they do." Doop, doop, and I decide to copy it. He's like, that is 1,000% a Get Band. That's a funk intro on the drums. And it's like, you would never think, like, oh, grunge and funk are that close. Yeah. Like, no way.
It's so close. And I can't, funk is the best. I love, we're going to do a funk episode eventually.
Oh, let's do a funk episode.
Because funk has so, and especially if George Clinton's involved. There's so many.
Well, if it's a funk, it's probably either he has his hand in all funk. He's like funk, the godfather of funk. For sure.
Like, no, I don't like George Clinton, but I like Parliament. He's in Parliament.
Yeah,
I like P-Funk. He's in P-Funk. Like, he's everywhere.
He's everywhere.
Oh man! All right, let's get a rating on this album. Out of, I'm gonna give you two options here. Rate it out of 5, either Crying Doves or Purple Rain.
Oh, I want to do both.
You can do both.
Can I do out of 5 Crying Doves in the Purple Rain?
Yes. Yes.
I am going to give it a 4.5. It's almost the perfect album. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you improved on it, but I'm sure there's some way you could, but, like, it's very close to being, like, the perfect album. I think if, like, for some reason, I don't know, if, like, one song was taken out and you put on, like, Erotic City for some reason, then it'd be, like, the perfect album. I was going to say,
like, if you can Frankenstein his albums into, like, not a greatest hits, because you got to keep most of it together, but, like, you pull one, drop another, like...
I think I would pull out Darling Nikki, put in Erotic City, and then maybe pull out... Ooh, that's a hard one, the last one. I know a lot of people like it, but if I pull out Baby I'm a Star and put in... Raspberry Beret, that's a perfect album for me. That's 1,000% my perfect Prince
the
album. Perfect
Prince and the Revolution album.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, I'm also going to give it 4.5 out of 5. It is incredible. Like, I have nothing bad to say about this album, obviously. Mm-hmm. Like, it is so well put together. Go watch the movie. Go listen to it. Learn all these songs. They're fucking great. Just dig, if you will, this album.
Dig, if you will, the album.
Because, oh my god. Like, I think, again, this is one of those albums that I will always tell people. It's on the must listen. It's there with Thriller. It's there with The Wall. It's there with, like, Ride the Lightning. Like, yeah. I have so many albums that I have. Number of the Beast.
Number
like,
of the Beast.
I tell so many people all the time, like, these are the albums you need to listen to. Like, one of my favorite albums from P-Funk is Maggot Brain.
Okay.
And it's weird. Yeah. And the reason, like, it doesn't sound like a funk album. The song Maggot Brain's like 9 minutes long with a long guitar solo.
Mm-hmm.
But it's P-Funk. Like, P-Funk. Yeah.
It's 1,000% so, P-Funk.
Like, Jesus Christ. 4.5 from both of us. Rest in peace, Prince. We love and miss you. Definitely sad I never was able to go to a show.
Yeah, it's too soon.
Definitely too poor for it. But fuck, man. This is one of those time machine, like, if I had the ability to time travel, I would definitely go to a Prince show.
Yeah. And like you said, we're definitely a little bit young for the Prince spectrum, but like, yo, that the stardom and the musical prowess of Prince lives well beyond his years. And, like, I feel like it's going to die slowly just because of the nature of music and how people evolve. But there's going to be someone, either there's probably a 5-year-old kid right now that when he gets a little older is going to hear Prince and immediately fall in love with it.
Yeah.
Even though it's way out of their spectrum. It just, that's a beautiful thing about music. It transcends time.
Yeah.
And that's why I fucking love music.
Yeah, exactly. I honestly, I cannot wait for people to start, like, I don't think I've seen it on TikToks that become reels on Instagram.
I think because the Prince estate is very regulated. It's kind of like the Michael Jackson estate.
Okay.
So, like, you can't just put Purple Rain on, like, a TikTok.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah, I mean,
I feel like eventually it's going to die down, but I think when it does die down, someone's going to be like, hey, did you guys hear this guy named Prince? Like, it's super cool.
Yeah.
It's like, bro...
Yeah, and that's when I want to slap at you.
Yeah.
Like, I listen to it at least twice a month.
Yeah.
Minimum.
I hear When Doves Cry at least once a week.
Like, it's just in the playlist. I have to listen to a Prince song. Alright, we're at time here, Ruben.
It's been a while.
Yeah, you got anything to say? Buys, plugs, shenanigans?
Yeah, I'll give a little bit of an intro. My name is Ruben. If you want to find me anywhere, I am on Instagram at REC Matrix. That's RECMATRIX. I am the blue collar sad boy. I like all kinds of music, mostly emo and rock and metal, but you see I do like Prince and a lot of other different type of genres. So if you like music, come check me out. I also like raccoons and lifting weights and working hard with wrenches because that's what I do for a living. If you like that, follow me. If you don't, then don't. I am also on with my boy Danny here on the podcast Turning Tables Podcast.
It's
live play D&D podcast where every arc or so we change who's in charge of DMing. That way you have a fresh perspective and fresh characters coming in the story. If you like that kind of stuff, follow us at Turning Tables Pod on Instagram. Spelled like just how it sounds. And that's all I got.
All right. Thank you all so much for listening. Follow this podcast on Instagram at Hops and Notes Pod and myself on Instagram at Wrathchild714. Follow me on the beer app Untappd at Wrathchild714.
Oh, yeah.
Follow the network, Horrible People's Network. Let me pull in Alex. That's HORRORBLE, People's Network on Instagram. Listen to Turning Tables. If you like video games, go listen to NPC. If you like horror movies like all of us, go listen to Horrible People's Podcast. It's great. We love it. We're glad to be part of the
Horrible People Network.
The network, yeah. It's incredible, and we're having so much fun doing this. But until next time, go crazy and laugh in the purple rain. Goodbye!
See you in that purple rain. Purple rain. Purple rain.
For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to Horrible People's Network on Instagram. That's HORROR.
Bobby People's Network on Instagram.